The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition for this week. Apologize if my voice sounds a little odd today. Dealing with a little remnants of my cold from earlier this week. But if anything, it'll make me sound more radio macho. Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's my ears and I just sound different to myself. But if you pick up on something, that's all that's going on. I've got a whole slew of questions today. I think Jim also might later in the show be able to share some information on the question we posed to our audience. We had, you know, Jim talked a little bit last week about somebody who was criticizing the rabbit hole approach to answering questions. And I think we've gotten a flurry of responses to that request for feedback on whether we should be going down all these rabbit holes or not. But I'll leave it to him to share. Because mostly, I think people responded to him directly. I only saw a couple of them come through, copied to me. But I know we're going to dive in first to some Social Security questions and then reach into the bag for whatever variety of questions on retirement planning that we can dig up. As a reminder, if you want to submit your own questions for us to cover on the show, best way to do that is to email Jim directly. Jim@jimhelps.com is the email. That's jimhelps.com. And just make sure in the subject line you make it clear it's a question for the podcast. And he'll throw it into the hopper and see when it gets chosen. If, I guess, it gets chosen is also an appropriate way of describing that because we can't answer every single question, of course. But we do, to keep things timely, we do pick out at least one or two questions every week that just came in fresh that week, instead of always reaching into the hopper from months ago. But Jim, if you're ready to go, I'm probably ready to go, and welcome to your own show.
Why, thank you.
Sure.
You, it's been a while since we chatted. Chris wasn't in the office when I was in the office this week, and I know, except for on Tuesday. So this is definitely not COVID, is that?
Well, unless I have a whole bunch of bad tests, but I think it's not, never been positive, but whatever I had earlier has kind of transitioned into a, I don't know, bronchitis pneumonia kind of feeling, but it's not okay. Severe. It hasn't been bad. If it gets bad over the weekend, I'll go to the doctor, but.
You remind me of that episode from Friends when Phoebe had a cold. And all of a sudden, she got a very bluesy voice and could sing well. And then eventually, when her cold went away, she went back to singing horrible, and she was trying to catch everybody's cold. Yeah. So you've got that bluesy voice. Oh. I wish we had some jazz music that you can play in the background. You know, a little Barry White in the background, and you can start reading some of these emails in a very soothing and meaningful voice.
That sounds kind of creepy, actually. I'm not sure.
It's just making me think of Barry White as you're talking, and Phoebe.
I mean, can you hear the difference, or is it just me? Does it sound a little different?
Oh, no, no. I can definitely pick up on a difference. Okay, and again, you got...
That's what's going on.
You got almost a version, a very poor version of Barry White.
Oh, I'm not even in the same ballpark as that, I would hope. But although that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
No, it wouldn't.
To develop a permanent voice that sounds like Barry White.
Yeah, it's... You'd go a lot further
probably
in life.
In all aspects, yeah. So okay. Hopefully you don't have any questions that that require me to use a ton of words to answer, because I do occasionally have some coughing issues. But so far, so good. I've got my lozenges. I'm, you know, well, so it's okay. Just keep it reasonable.
You can hit the cough button. That's perfectly fine. Listeners will not mind. But you always answer the Social Security questions. I'm going to start with a couple of those, as we always do. Let me dig those up. And then we're going to get into the results of our question. Should we stop the rabbit holes? And should we stop having Chris repeat himself constantly, which is annoying at times, Chris? Mm-hmm. And I've got the results of that. We got 68 Whoa. Email replies.
Nice.
So I was very shocked.
And I'll be learning the results along with everyone else.
You have no idea what the results are. I think a couple of people did send it to you as well.
I think
well.
I got three, but nowhere near 68.
Yeah, well I did. So I do appreciate everyone who wrote, and we'll get to those results at the end of the show. That'll be a teaser to keep people listening to the results at the end of the show. I'm going to read a couple of the people were very creative in what they wrote, and they wrote some funny, and some were very good points. A few of them jumped out at me, so I'll read a couple of those, and I'll give the results of what our listeners want us to do.
Okay.
All right, let's jump into Social Security questions, see if I can find the darn things. Okay. So much easier when I'm in the office where everything is printed out.
You don't have a printer at home?
I do, but it's an old piece of thing.
Oh, well, we can get you a new printer.
Yeah, we may have to. All right. There we go. Okay. This first one made me smile. It actually came in this week. So it is one of I wouldn't necessarily say it's the new question of the week. I think, I didn't know you were going to sound like Barry White today. I think you can answer this really quickly.
Okay.
So I just thought it was a cute question. So we'll get to this one first. It is from someone who didn't list the state they're from. So I have no idea what state they're from. I see their name, but we're going to call them George, as we always do. And it says, just curious. My wife and I used the restricted application strategy to collect Social Security benefits. You may want to, Barry, answer mm-hmm. or at least explain to some of our listeners what that is.
Okay, will do.
There you go. I believe it is no longer available, and we were in the last age group that were able to take advantage of it. My question is, what prevents a couple now from using the strategy? How would it get monitored? So why don't you explain what they're doing?
Okay.
And they're asking rhetorically, I don't know, maybe I'm guessing when I read this, they've got friends and they told their friends what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And their friends who don't qualify are probably saying, wow, I wish we could do that. Mm-hmm. And this guy's thinking, how the hell is Social Security ever going to find out? Why don't you just kind of address this a little? I found it cute.
Okay. So a restricted application is when you as a Social Security potential beneficiary have access, or you are what we call eligible for more than one benefit. So you file an application for a specific benefit, leaving another benefit unclaimed. You're restricting your application to just one benefit. And you might say, well, why? Isn't that just how things work naturally? No. The way the rules work and the way the defaults are in the system is they generally, when you go in, the computer defaults to claiming all benefits to which you're eligible at the same time. And then the computer figures out what you should be paid, and then you get paid, but you've technically applied for everything on the table. That's the default. The restricted application allows you to target the benefit that you would like to receive, leaving others unclaimed. The advantage to that back in the day when this was more readily available was that you could claim, say, a spousal benefit only while letting your own benefit grow in the background and then later on switch to that higher benefit while collecting something along the way, that spousal benefit. That was very popular. And didn't work for everybody. It depends on the amounts and when your spouse is claiming and all that. But that was the most common application of this restricted application technique. Well, in the overhaul back in 2015, I believe it was, that they did away with some of what they called loopholes in Social Security, among other adjustments. They sunsetted. They decided they wanted to end this practice of filing a restricted application and instead make everyone play by the rules of what's called deeming. That when you go in to apply, you are now deemed to be applying for all benefits that you are eligible to receive simultaneously. And you're not able to pick and choose or do these restricted applications. Well, in sunsetting, they set a deadline. They essentially said, everyone who is born after January 1st of 1954 is no longer able to file a restricted application. So those who were born before January 2nd of 1954 are able to still file a restricted application. Well, this was really only of benefit to people who would do this technique prior to their own age 70 so that they could receive a spousal benefit while their own benefit grew until age 70 when they would turn it on. Because it's at that point in time when you reach age 70, you no longer would reap any rewards from delaying your Social Security benefits further because the delayed retirement credits stop once you reach age 70. So that means we are now less than 2 years away. We're, a year and 3 months about 15 months away from this going away from the face of the planet for everyone. Because in 15 months, the youngest person who is able to deploy this strategy, which would be someone born on January 1st of 1954, will turn 70 in 15 months from when we're recording this. And at that point, no one else will be left to have been grandfathered into this technique. So that's what this person is talking about the fact that they took advantage of this. They must have been, at least the one who filed the restricted application, one spouse does this, was born before January 2nd of 1954. But his question, what prevents a couple from using this strategy? Well, what prevents it is the Social Security system will not allow them to enter a restricted application for someone who was born after January 1st of 1954. That's how it's prevented. There's no monitoring needed. They literally cannot enter the application in a restricted manner if you were born after January 1st of 1954. So it's pretty simple how they're going to prevent people from doing this. They've got the computer system that's programmed not to allow it. And there's no overriding to be done to this particular thing. That's the simple answer of how they're going to do it. But I wanted to give everyone background as to what he was even claiming to have been doing, because not everyone is familiar with the restricted application. And we will never have to mention it again unless it gets revived. Once we get to January 1st of 2024, at that point, no one will be able to deploy this strategy. And the window is closing between now and then. Fewer and fewer people are going to get an advantage to having done so if you haven't already enacted it. Your window is closing. And January 1st of 2024, we will cease to even speak of the restricted application other than to remind people you can't do it anymore. So I think that tackles everything that he was curious about. So, Jim, did that satisfy your curiosity on the topic as well?
I think it did, and I'm amazed at how long you went for someone with a Barry White voice. I like it. I think you need to keep that voice.
Well, sometimes this kind of lung thing kind of lingers on for a while, so I guess I won't go to the doctor and seek any sort of treatment and see if I can prolong it. It's a balancing act. I don't want it to get worse, but if it stayed like this, I guess I could live with it.
What do your students say? Have they mentioned anything to you about it?
I haven't really, since I developed this particular symptom, I haven't really been in front of students. So,
Okay. We could do another poll to our listeners. Should Chris ignore his health care and stay with this voice and his lung infection, or go back to his old voice? Anyways, just kidding. Please don't send me 68 emails on what Chris should do with this voice.
I'm pretty sure regardless of the polling, I will have to do whatever my wife suggests I do. So.
True, true. Okay, she doesn't like Barry White, I take it.
No, I think she appreciates Barry White, but... I think she is more averse to infections than love for Barry White voice.
I'm telling you, put some soothing music on in the background and like tonight, just start, you know, talking romantically.
Well, I can't. She's actually, my wife's actually in Jordan right now.
Wow. I mean, that's like other side of the world. It I is, didn't know that. Yeah. What is Melissa doing in Jordan?
She's on a little excursion with her dad and stepmom and, they're touring Jordan and doing some stuff there and Israel and that kind of area and visiting all the archaeological sites and having a good old time while I'm here doing this darn podcast.
Wow. I'm going to Ohio and Kentucky. They got nothing on me.
True.
They're probably going to be jealous.
It's much moist. It's much moister there. Yeah. I've seen, she sent me some pictures so far and it's pretty much beige on beige on beige with some blue sky and, everyone wearing a hat in the sun and complaining about the heat. So
a lot of sand too, I'm
yeah,
sure. A lot
a fair
of, sand.
Amount of sand. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Alrighty. Another Social Security question. This one is from, we'll call him George, but guess which state he's from. Go ahead.
Georgia.
Guess. Georgia? No, Ohio. Oh. Where I will be visiting.
Ah, okay.
In another short week. Northern Kentucky, Southern Ohio. I will be hiking in the Red River Gorge again this trip. So I'm looking forward to that. That's in Kentucky for those who don't know. But I figure since he's an Ohioan and perhaps someday a neighbor, I thought I would get to his email.
Okay.
He says, "Hi, Jim and Chris, Bob and Juniors." He throws us all in there. Mm-hmm. But being a Social Security question, it's really going to be, "Hi, Chris." This is, quote unquote, George from Ohio. You'll laugh at this, Chris. He begins, "I faithfully exercise to your show." I don't get that.
Maybe, you know, I guess we can interpret that as we're helping keep people alive by producing this podcast and putting it out there.
I still think we have to have an exercise version of the Retirement and IRA show for these people. Step 1, 2, 3, 4, and then we... say our question and then keep going. They're going to get a rhythm. They get that rhythm going. But anyways, he faithfully exercises to our show, as he puts, as many of your listeners do. Mm-hmm. So thank you all.
As far as I can tell, they all do, but
not all of them, but
well, they don't all mention it, but there's a lot of people that do.
We've got a lot of listeners who exercise to our show. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was listening to the recent show regarding the application of COLA to your Social Security benefit amount and the discussion of those who were born in 1960 to 61, essentially getting screwed because of the timing of the benefit adjustment and receiving no COLA for 2021 and 2022. We're not going to get deep into that, but I just wanted to lay the framework because he's got an interesting thing going on here, but I don't know if you're going to agree with him fully or not. He goes on to say, "That situation applies to my wife, who was born in 1961. However, as I was thinking about it, there may be mitigating circumstances that you did not mention." Mm-hmm. And that would be you, Barry. Okay. Mm-hmm. He goes on to describe to you, Chris. "I," meaning him, not me, "I was born in 1959. And luckily this year and next year's larger COLA adjustment will be added to my benefit. I am planning on waiting until 70 to turn on my Social Security. My wife will start taking her benefit at her full retirement age, which from my calculations, I think is 67. Correct? Wasn't that based on what he said? She was born in 61, so yeah, that's just before 67, right? Or is that 67?
No, it's 67 at 60. 1960.
Okay, so she hit it with 61.
Yep.
Okay, so her full retirement age is 67. So correct. Let me continue. My wife will start taking her benefit at her full retirement age and then switch to the spousal benefit, which will be larger than her benefit. Mm-hmm. When I begin to take my Social Security benefits, am I correct that she will receive in total one half of my benefit, which would have been calculated with the higher COLA adjustments that she is missing out on for those 2 years? In other words, she would receive her lower COLA adjustments for only 1 year when she's 67. But when she switches to the spousal benefit when she's 68, and remember, listeners, that's when he turns 70 and turns on his Social Security, he's saying his wife will then switch from her age 67 benefits to her spousal benefit when she's 68. So let me repeat his point, Chris. When she switches to the spousal benefit when she's 68, she will receive half of my benefit, which would have received the larger COLA adjustments. I just thought if that is the case, you may have other listeners who are in similar situations and may like to know the negative effect of not receiving larger COLA may have minimal impact due to spousal and survivor benefits. Anything you want to add to that? It's not really asking a mm-hmm. question. He's pointing it out. I don't quite see it fully that way. I see what he's saying. But anyways, what do you think?
I think we have a very astute listener. This is a one-off circumstance. Well, not one-off. It's not unique just to him. But a circumstance where specifically his wife has a benefit low enough to be below half of his full retirement age benefit. To clarify, she won't get half of his just benefit because he's waiting to 70 to claim. She will not get half of his age 70 benefit. The maximum spousal benefit is half of his full retirement age benefit, which for him would be the benefit he would have received at 66 and 10 months had he claimed at that point. So about 24%, a little bit higher than that, 25% less than his age 70 benefit. But the point is, it is based on the PIA of the number holder being him. So his PIA starts out and is first established at age 62, but then they do an immediate adjustment to your PIA as you claim at later ages. I wish they called it the adjusted PIA, and in the workflow of doing the calculation, they actually still refer to it as the PIA. But if they name something PIA and then they change it, does it not become something new? I don't know. That's just a pet peeve of mine. And by the adjustments, I mean they add the cost of living adjustments that have occurred since he was 62. So his PIA, before they calculate what the spousal would be, are receiving those COLA credits, if you want to call them that. So in effect, yes, she's going to receive her lower benefit, her own, at first. And then when he unlocks the door to the spousal benefit by claiming at 70, when she, as he pointed out, will be 68 years old, and a year after she has claimed her own, that spousal benefit and that spousal offset will have gotten the benefit of the cost of living adjustments here in 2022 and 2023 that he received in his adjusted PIA, I will call it that. That's my terminology, not Social Security's, will have gotten credit for that. So when they do that spousal offset figuring in the math, she's going to get benefit of that. So I think he's right. My understanding is she would be made whole if you want to, I don't know, you know, that's probably the wrong terminology. So no one is being robbed of anything. They're just, you have a lifetime of wage inflation and cost of living adjustments that are applied to you in a certain technique with certain restrictions and rules. and everyone has a different lifespan. You know, it's all defined by the year you were born and what happened thereafter. And we all experience a different sequence of these things happening in a different set. But there's this donut hole in the middle when you are 60 and 61 years old that you don't receive benefit of any inflation adjustments. And that's true of everyone, just in the way that the calculations work. Your wage inflation adjustments stop the year you turn 60, and you don't receive a COLA adjustment until the year you turn 63. And that's just the way the rules are. So if you happen, and what he's referring to is what I pointed out in previous shows, if you happen to be in the donut hole during these couple years right now that we're experiencing a spike in inflation, that's just bad timing. That's just unfortunate circumstances for those born, in this case, 1960 and 61, that are, you know, missed out on last year's and won't get this year's either, one of them. I think it's 1961 that's most harmed in this case. People born in 1960 get one of the two. They're going to get this year's that's coming up. But if you're born in 1961, you missed last year's and you're going to miss this year's as well. You're right in the middle of the donut hole, we would call it. But if your benefit is small enough that eventually you're going to claim a spousal and your spouse is not in the same donut hole as you, you might escape this little blip. He's pointing out something that I believe is true. The way the math would work out, I think you're going to be fine. Now he has, this kind of got sprung on me. I didn't do formal research, but my understanding of the way this math works, I think he's right. I'll look into it to make sure there's not a gotcha in there, because I'd hate to give people false hope that they're escaping the donut hole. But I'll throw it out there as well. The donut hole could negatively affect those who are eventually going to jump into a spousal benefit on a spouse who was affected themselves by the donut hole. So here's a case where there's someone getting bailed out of the hole. There could be people put in the hole if the circumstances were altered in the correct, well, the most unfortunate way. So, that's my assessment of the situation. I don't know if I'll discover anything that's a gotcha and I'll have to retract my comments. It's always possible. And if I will promise you, if I discover that I've misled you in any way as listeners, I will certainly make it right. But that's my understanding that he is. I agree with him. I think his wife's going to be bailed out of the donut hole.
But it's not a full bailout. That was my point.
No, it's full. You'll be full.
You still think so? Even though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because her spousal benefit is based upon her, difference in the, well, half of his. And then they break it down then into, well, how much is she getting on her own benefit? And what offset do we need to apply her to get her up to this level? So his PIA being inflated is going to increase that offset. And that's what's going to bail her out. Her PIA has been damaged, but
his has not.
Okay. And when they top her up to his, I think that's going to bail her out. I think he's right. I think this is a specific instance where a person could have just a fleeting effect of the donut hole and then be made whole by switching over. It's not technically switching over, but getting the spousal offset.
Fair enough. I'll go with that. All right. I'm going to do one more Social Security question because the first one really wasn't a question. It was just kind of a remark. This one's fairly short. I think you can nail it. Okay. It came in from Michigan, fine state of Michigan.
Not too far from Ohio.
It's north of Ohio. It's
not
that close.
Too far from.
Especially where I will be, right on the Kentucky-Ohio border.
It's not close to you, right.
No.
But
yes, I will agree. There are parts of Michigan and Ohio that are very close together. And I hear their colleges get along really well.
Well, don't they? Isn't there parts
that
touches? I know that. But they're not just close. Aren't there parts that touch?
I think so. I don't have my map in front of me.
You can't get any closer than that, right? Unless you invade.
Well, I don't think Ohio's going to invade Michigan or vice versa. But maybe I'll go to an Ohio State game wearing Michigan regalia. That would be interesting.
Oh, yeah. They're touching. It's up there by Toledo.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay. Yeah, that right would make sense around the Great Lakes.
Nice straight line there that they they touch. Yeah, right along I-90, just north of I-90. It's parallel.
Okay. Yeah. There's got to be a lot of college rivalry up there, I would assume. Okay. Anyways, let's get to this Social Security question from a Michiganian.
Michigander, I think is what it is.
Michigander? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, like the duck.
It came into us on my birthday, July 24th, so not that bad.
Oh, did you get your present?
Oh. Did he get me a present?
No, this did you get your birthday present?
From you? No. Your lovely daughter bought cupcakes that we all ate, but you didn't
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, the cupcakes. Well,
those were good, weren't they?
I'm sure. Yeah. They were good. Mm-hmm. Good. Okay. Hi, Chris. He gets right to the point. He knows it's going to you.
Yeah.
Hi, Chris. I'm curious if my PIA, or primary insurance amount, folks, that's what PIA is, if my PIA is presented in current or future dollars. For example, I'm 55. According to the Social Security Administration, at 67, my full retirement age, my PIA is $3,384. I know Social Security has a COLA, so when I'm estimating my Social Security benefit 12 years from now, do I use $3,384 as the present value and apply my estimated inflation, for example, 3% over 12 years, equals $4,848? Or has Social Security factored inflation in my PIA in 2034 will in fact be $3,384 and will only get inflation adjustments after that? I hope this makes sense.
Excellent question. And to provide people less confusion, although clearly there was a bit of confusion because he's asking this question, they have taken the approach that they're giving it to you in today's dollars. So they are not applying any future cost of living adjustments that might be applied to your benefit in these estimates. So particularly for younger people in their 40s or 50s, that's a way off into the future. And excuse me one second. Okay, sorry about that. Cough button. They kept it in today's dollars so people can kind of envision what their benefit would be compared to their current budget that they're familiar with. That's the intent of that. But if you're really trying to do projections, some people do planning and projections all surrounding today's dollars or today's numbers, and you wouldn't make those inflation adjustments necessarily. I don't like doing that. That's not the way we do things in the office, because if you do everything in today's dollars, you're assuming that inflation is going to be the same for all aspects of the numbers you're dealing with, Social Security, your expenses, all this kind of stuff. And in reality, there's lots of differences in the inflation rates between these things. So I think the more appropriate way to do it is the way he's talking about: project his expenses the way he might project them using the inflation rate that's appropriate for his expenses that he's looking to cover with his Social Security. And then project the Social Security with the inflation rate that he believes is reasonable. He used 3%. I'm not saying that's reasonable or not. That's his judgment on it. I'm not sure I would use 3% necessarily on the increases. First of all, he has to get through the donut hole where there's going to be a couple years during that period between 55 and 67 that he's not going to get any inflation adjustments. So that hole right there is going to be a suppressing factor in what his real inflation might be on his Social Security. So keep that in mind. Plus, I'd say between 55 and 60, he might very well have higher than average inflation, but then maybe lower than average inflation after that, depending on how things go. We don't know, right? The only thing I can tell you is when he's 60 and 61, he's not getting any inflation adjustments, the donut hole that we've talked about before. But the years prior to that, the 5 years or so prior to that, and then the years, 7 years or 5 years or so after turning 62 before he gets his full retirement age, There will likely be some form of inflation there. And he's decided, you know, he used an example of 3. I don't know necessarily that I would use that, but you can use your own estimates if you want a more realistic prediction of what we call the nominal value of that in that year. So 12 years from now, the nominal value is the dollar amount in that year, as opposed to the real value, which is an inflation adjusted, you know, into today's terms kind of value. So they're giving you kind of the real number, not the nominal number in the estimates themselves. And you'd have to do your own inflation assumptions to get there. They're assuming no future COLAs when they're giving you those estimates on your Social Security statement for the future. Why are they doing that? You know, one, it makes it easier for people to envision compared to their current budget. But they also admit, if you read through the fine print of how they make these decisions, they intentionally make some of these assumptions in order to suppress the size of the estimated benefit to encourage Americans to save more money. They admit that, which I think is good. I'm not saying that as a criticism. I do think people assume Social Security is going to cover more than it actually does. There is a part of the population that it covers more than they're expecting. But I think in general, when we look at the entire population, people overestimate how much Social Security is going to take care of them. And the only reason I make that conclusion is Americans just don't save enough for their own retirements, which is a looming crisis. We're kind of already started it, but it's even a bigger issue that is all a result of the economy's transition away from the old-fashioned pensions that people generally used to have under their careers. But that's probably a topic for another day. That's another rabbit hole that I haven't been given permission to go down those yet. So we'll stay away from the rabbit holes until we hear the results of the poll.
Excellent. Excellent. All righty. Well, those were 3 Social Security questions this time, folks. Hope you all didn't mind.
I asked you to take it easy on me, and then you just like just bludgeon me with half an hour talking.
Now we're gonna get into non Social Security questions. Okay. But you may want to, you know, add your point of view on a few things here too as well. But you can pause your Barry White voice for a little while. Phew, let it heal. I did hear a dog barking in the background too.
Yeah, I know.
Do you have a large dog in the office?
In full disclosure, when I muted and I claimed it was a cough, it was actually my dog barking. But they kept barking long enough, I had to finally unmute. And then, sorry. The UPS guy came to the door. I saw him walking up the... I'm at home, by the way. I'm not in the office.
Oh, you're at home. That's why. Because I'm like, usually you bring in this little like 4-pound thing.
That
was a much bigger dog.
I have a 120-pounder as well. And that was him that you heard because the UPS man invaded his space.
Gotcha. Okay. So no problem. I'm sure other people heard it as well. Now they know what's going on. Okay, so let's get into some non-Social Security questions. So we'll begin with what I like to call lately the new question of the week. This one came in on Monday. I thought it was a pretty good one, Chris. And I know you don't want to talk much, being with your Barry White voice and all, but you can definitely add some to this because it's not only an IRA question. I could go down 100 rabbit holes with this question. Uh-oh. Let's put it that
not
way.
Yet.
Yeah, I'm going to try not to. We're not because I got other questions I want to get to. And I could have done an EDU on this, but let's keep it much, much simpler. So he begins, "Hi, Jim, Chris, Bob, and the rest." See, that's Junior is not going to like seeing that. "And the rest."
I think they feel good about themselves just being acknowledged at all. So I think it's fine.
Well, to me, they're
they've never been on the show, so it's like they're just like these faceless names out there.
But they're being treated like the Professor and Marianne by what he wrote. "Hi, Jim, Chris, Bob, and the rest." That's Professor and Marianne. You know it, the original Gilligan's Island. Here's a little bit of trivia for you, folks. Uh-oh. You never know where my brain's going to go on this show. Gilligan's Island, you remember that, right, Chris? Because you're like my age.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The little theme song, which I think everybody could probably recite by heart. Mm-hmm. If you listen, I've got the actual entire season, which isn't that long. I think it only went 2.5 seasons. I have the entire season on DVD. That's how lame my life is. But did you know at the beginning, the black and white versions, the original shows, I don't know how far in they got before they changed the song. They never acknowledged the professor and Marianne in the song. Hmm. Did you know that little bit of trivia? They called them The Rest. And that's why it is. Because they
didn't
used to
fit
say,
in the melody, apparently.
In the melody, yeah. When the boat and crash, mm-hmm. I'm not going to start the whole song. Mm-hmm. And they start and saying, with Gilligan, the skipper to the millionaire and his wife. Then they go, the movie star. And then they would say, and the rest here on Gilligan's Isle. They just totally blew off the professor and Marianne.
Well, they were kind of secondary characters.
Well, I'm just saying. And then eventually they acknowledged and put mm-hmm. the professor and Marianne in. When I just read, I don't know why I'm going off on this, but when I saw Hi, Jim, Chris, Bob, and the rest, it just popped into my mind the theme from Gilligan's Island. This guy's blowing
so
off
we
the
can
professor
now,
and Marianne.
So now we can call Jacob and Andrew the professor and Marianne, which is which.
Oh, God, that would be... Well, first of all, they will have no idea what we're saying.
That's probably true.
If I start calling them the Professor and Marianne.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they're, what, 24 now? 25?
Yeah, I know.
I don't think they have any idea what the hell Gilligan's Island is.
Probably not.
But,
did you know
that...
Well, here's another piece of trivia. Bob Denver, right?
Was not named Bob Denver.
No. He was Gilligan from Gilligan's Isle, right?
Okay.
His daughter went to high school in Fort Collins.
No kidding. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
I don't think he ever lived here, but somehow his daughter ended up here. My guess is her mother was here as well, but I just know that she went to Fort Collins High School.
Oh, here's a little bit of trivia. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, see, folks, on the Retirement and IRA show, not only do we go down rabbit holes occasionally.
Just random,
You get these
facts.
Random thoughts running through my head. But anyways, Bob and the rest. He asked the question. Okay. Thank you so much for your formative show. I'm one of your listeners that plays the podcast on my daily walks. Here we go. Yep. Another exerciser. This is wonderful. He's from Venice. Actually, he spelt it Vince. Is there a Vince, V-I-N-C-E, California? Or did he mean Venice, you think?
I don't know. I think he would have said Venice Beach if he said Venice.
Well, Google V-I-N-C-E. Is there a Vince, California? Because that's where he says he's from. I don't want to mispronounce his town. Anyways, we're going to call him George. He's from Vince, California. Thank you so much for your informative show. I'm one of your listeners that plays the podcast on the daily walks. I very much like your approach to retirement planning, minimum dignity floor, fund number, and the potential use of an annuity to fund the minimum dignity floor gap after all your other sources of secure income is turned on. I am 59. My wife is 54. I'm retired, but working part-time, as is my wife. We have calculated our gap and the amount of money to set aside now to buy an annuity if it makes sense later when I'm age 70. I'd like so he's really following what we do, Chris. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, it's our opinion, it's our approach. He seems to like it. But so far, so good, right? He seems to be following right along.
Seems to be, yep.
Perfect. We are positioning my IRA and 401k to fund the annuity. What we like to call, folks, always taxable accounts. So they're going to use money inside his IRA and 401k to buy an annuity, maybe at 70. Remember, folks, they're only 59 and 54 right now. He just thinks with his calculations, his secure income, he doesn't indicate what his secure income is, and it's not important. He's just indicating he's not going to have enough secure income at age 70. My gut tells me, Chris, one of them is delaying Social Security to 70. Hence, that's the point that he wants to have an annuity funded, perhaps. He doesn't know if he needs an annuity, so he's just reserving the money for now, folks, which is what we recommend. He could buy an annuity now that would guarantee him the income at 70, but that's still 11 years from now. So much can happen. Maybe he doesn't want to commit to an irrevocable annuity, otherwise known as a deferred income annuity. And maybe he doesn't want to put money in a revocable annuity with an income benefit. Those would be a fixed indexed annuity or a variable annuity with what is called a living benefit rider. He doesn't want to commit to that either, even though he could call it off, because he probably, Chris, has figured out the fees of those annuities are quite high. Maybe he doesn't need to do that yet. So far, folks, I kind of like what he's doing. But here's what he asks, Chris. So he wants to know, he says, I'm interested in your thoughts on using these qualified plans to eventually purchase my income annuity. Are there any downsides from a tax perspective or any other perspective that you can think of? Most of the money in our qualified accounts will go to purchase this annuity, so I would not be planning on doing any Roth conversions now. But what are your thoughts on weighing a Roth conversion strategy against the scenario where we decide not to take out an annuity in the future and therefore have very large RMDs? I think he's got a lot going on here, and I just wanted to add some clarity. It's too bad he didn't share with us, Chris, if he has any what we call maybe taxable bank and brokerage assets. He just indicated that to purchase an income annuity at 70 to cover his shortage in the minimum dignity floor will come from a 401k or an IRA, and that most of the 401k and IRA will have to be used for that purchase. So my gut tells me he must have bank and brokerage assets, or he's going to be in a very tight retirement situation. I started thinking to myself, Chris, where's his fund money going to come from then?
He must have other, if the entire qualified account or accounts would have to be just in there to protect minimum dignity floor, because that's the purpose of it. He clearly is trying to follow our approach, which the purpose of generating the extra secure income isn't to cover everything. It's to cover the minimum dignity floor expenses specifically. So he's got to have something else somewhere, or you're right. He's got only minimum dignity floor. That's his plan, and no fund, which some people find themselves in that position, but that's not optimal, we'll call it.
No, and if that's the case, he doesn't indicate to us when. Well, he says he's retired and so is his wife, but they're still working part-time. I'm guessing their part-time, his thing's running through my mind. Their part-time income is covering all their expenses, or they are living off of their bank and brokerage assets now, especially the wife, because she can't withdraw from her qualified accounts. She would have to pay a 10% penalty. He's 59. I don't know if he's over 59 and a half. So he could take from his qualified accounts if he had to. So there's a lot of assumptions we have to make here, listeners and listener in general who asked this question. But thoughts going through my mind from a planning perspective have to do with what are you doing for your fund? If it's going to take all of your IRA 401k assets, or most, as you put, of those assets to cover your minimum dignity floor shortage at age 70, if you decide to purchase an income annuity, you have to have other assets. And he says he's contemplating maybe weighing a Roth conversion strategy to avoid future RMDs. And he said something that I kind of picked up on, Chris. He wrote at the end, he's saying, what are your thoughts on weighing a Roth conversion strategy now against the scenario where we decide in the future, he's talking, folks, not to take out an annuity and instead suffer large RMDs? I'm sure you picked up on the same thing, Chris. Let's look at this, listeners, to what he's saying. He's thinking, should we do a tax analysis now? Yes, hands down, you need a forward-looking tax analysis. find someone who can do that. Find a firm like ours that, I don't mean like ours as in hire a firm, but find a firm that operates like ours and will do for you a forward-looking tax projection, because you do have to start looking at the taxation issues. However, if your only money is this IRA and 401k of which you talk about, and you have to earmark that for your minimum dignity floor shortage, if that's all you got, then it's a moot point. Whether you take the money out of the IRA in the future as an RMD or as just a discretionary distribution, or have it sent to you as part of a lifetime guaranteed annuity payment, it's all, Chris, going to be taxed to him the same. Follow me?
Yes.
It's all taxable income. So he's saying, should I consider doing Roth conversions now because I might not in the future annuitize, turn my IRA into an annuity stream, and therefore I'm going to have very big RMDs. So should I evaluate doing Roth conversions now? Yes, you should. But you are forgetting one important fact. You're still going to have a big IRA. I assume it's going to be a big IRA. I don't know. You're going to have an IRA that you're going to be taking dollars from. The question is, are you going to be taking dollars as a discretionary IRA distribution, a non-discretionary RMD, or a lifetime annuity payment? If you go with the lifetime annuity payment, those payments, Chris, are going to be bigger than what?
Just taking the RMDs themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Your first RMD is going to be about 3.9% of the account.
Right.
If that RMD is not enough to cover your minimum dignity floor expenses, you're going to have to take out more. My gut tells me, Chris, it's not. Why do I say that? He says he needs to use the entire account to cover his minimum dignity floor shortage. So I'm just guessing the RMD is not going to be enough. I could be wrong. But let's assume, listener, for the sake of argument, your RMD is going to be enough to cover your minimum dignity floor expenses. If you don't annuitize, you're worried that those RMDs are going to be large and you're going to have to be paying taxes on them, I guess. So you're wondering if you should convert. Conversely, if you do annuitize, your payments are going to be significantly larger than 3.7, 3.9% that your first RMDs usually are. They're going to be significantly larger, probably 5, 6, 6.5%, more if interest rates keep rising, could be 7, 8%. Very large. Why? Annuity payments benefit from the account balance, interest that the insurance company will credit, and mortality credits. And those mortality credits can be quite large, and they can cause initial payments from income annuities to be substantially above your RMD payments. Now, there's a lot of variables in there, but generally speaking, annuity payments are far greater than RMD payments. So if you are worried about large RMDs, if you quote unquote don't annuitize that IRA in the future, and therefore you want to consider Roth conversions now, you have to be equally worried about your strategy. You're telling us you want to reserve this IRA for your minimum dignity floor shortage, and do you see any problems with it? Well, yes, I'm trying to explain the problem. Before you commit accounts today for what's going to cover minimum dignity floor in the future, if you have tax diversification, always taxable IRAs, maybe taxable brokerage accounts, never taxable Roth accounts, you should be doing an advanced tax analysis to try to decide what account or accounts plural you will actually purchase these annuities in to cover the taxes that will be owed. Should you convert today and annuitize a Roth in the future and have all tax-free income? I don't know. I don't know what your situation is. If you have bank and brokerage assets right now, remember, you said you're retired and you're working part-time. Unless you're part-time labor, if you and your wife are covering all your expenses, I'm thinking you're spending your brokerage assets first, leaving your IRA assets later. I don't know if that's the right approach. And I think you would agree, Chris, an advanced tax analysis. Maybe he should be taken from an IRA now, especially because he already is or will soon be 59 and a half. And maybe it makes sense to take taxable income now before tax rates rise January 1st of 2026, or before they rise in 20 years when you are in your 70s or 30 years when you're in your 80s. He needs an advanced tax analysis. That's my take. What is your take?
Yeah, and keep in mind that I can tell from the way he wrote it, he thinks that he can only annuitize inside the always taxable traditional retirement accounts. And if he does a conversion, somehow he loses that. And that's not true at all. I think the tax question needs to be held separate from the secure income question. If it makes sense for him to do conversions from a tax standpoint, that doesn't mean that he wouldn't then annuitize. And if he has a blend of Roth and traditional, once he turns 70, you turn on a blend of secure income at that point, if that's what you're using. So I think somehow he's got stuck in his head. He can either do conversions or he can wait and use that account as a secure income source. They're not exclusive like that. They're not exclusive decisions. You need to, what we call mutually exclusive decisions.
And this is one, integrated.
Yeah, no, they just need to be integrated together. The tax question needs to be answered, and then the secure income situation can be addressed using a blend of accounts if need be. You don't have to use just one account and one type of account if you ultimately annuitize.
I think, listener, you should get an advanced tax analysis to start determining if Roth conversions today make sense. And a good advanced tax analysis will also begin to add a little bit of clarity on if in the future you will be taking or should take your lifetime annuity payments from a always taxable IRA, maybe taxable brokerage, or never taxable Roth IRA. An advanced tax analysis can lend some clarity there, but not full clarity, because nobody knows what the next 11 years are going to bring. Which brings me to this, listener. Why don't you do an advanced tax analysis now just to see if you should be doing conversions? Leave the decision on what account you're going to annuitize, an IRA, a Roth IRA, a brokerage account, to later. The final decision. Don't commit. This is one reason, Chris, we don't like buying deferred income annuities now. It is an irrevocable committed decision. If you buy a deferred income annuity in a maybe taxable brokerage account, and later it is shown that you should have maybe taken it from an IRA or a Roth IRA, it's too late if it was an irrevocable decision now. You see why we like and we always say the job of the younger you is to reserve the money today so the older you can decide if they want the income annuity and then also what account to buy it in. So we often tell our clients, we still want to leave you flexibility. Therefore, your quote-unquote reserve, some of it's going to be in a Roth, some of it's going to be in an IRA, some of it might be in a brokerage, assuming the client has all three accounts. We will decide as you get closer and closer and closer to actually needing the annuity, which account it is likely going to come from. But a lot of that will depend on your health. If you're a married couple, are you still a couple? Did you divorce? Are you a widow widower? Are we looking at inheritance issues? Do you need to make sure you leave a lot of Roth assets to a child, maybe with special needs or in a controlled trust, and you don't want high trust tax rates? So maybe we don't want to annuitize the Roth because that takes it out of a guaranteed inheritance pool. So we're going to want to leave the Roth as an inheritance. And so we'll turn around and annuitize the IRA, or maybe we'll annuitize a brokerage account or a mixture of the two. You're never going to nail it perfectly. I just wanted to point out to him, because he's saying, is there any downsides to using the IRA? When I read the email at first, it sounds to me like it's the only money he has. So whether or not there's a downside, it's a moot point. He needs to do it. But then I started thinking, he's got to have other assets somewhere to live off of. If not, after age 70, he's got no fun.
Right.
I just don't. And no buffer reserve, no guaranteed inheritance, no aging reserve. There's a lot missing. So he's got to have other assets that he doesn't share with us. Mm-hmm. So do an advanced tax analysis now and start seeing if converting makes sense or spending from your IRA makes sense, and leave bank and brokerage assets for later. And when you formulate your reserve, try to leave a little in all of the different tax diversified accounts you have. Always taxable, maybe taxable, never taxable. Because the older you will appreciate the flexibility of being able to see which account style the annuity should be purchased in, or annuities plural. You might want 60% of your income to come from a taxable account and 40% of your income to come from a non-taxable account. It doesn't have to be all. Your older you, the 70-year-old you, will run an advanced tax analysis and determine, based on what we know today at my age 70 and current tax laws, which I can guarantee you folks will be dramatically different than what they are now, and based on current tax laws, we should annuitize 50% in a Roth, 30% in a brokerage, 20% in a traditional IRA. Perhaps that's the breakdown, because each account is going to throw out different taxable income when it comes to that annuity. Anyways, that's about all I wanted to get to on that. But I thought that was a good question, so I made it new question of the week. The next one is more of a...
No, the next one's going to have to be the results of the poll, unless you want to put it off till next week.
Oh, let's leave the poll till next week. Maybe there'll be a few more feedback items.
No problem.
And I'll get to this, because this one was a PSA, and I thought it was really good. He wrote it. It's not a question, but he says, I just want to thank you guys. Let me read this. It came in from, we'll call him George. He is from, he doesn't say. So he's from somewhere in America. Okay. He says, greetings, Jim and Chris. I'm a big fan of your podcast, who at age 77 looks forward to listening to your shows twice a week. You ready for this, Chris? What do you think he says next?
But don't often, do anymore.
No, often when working out.
Oh, okay.
So just saying there is another one. Oh, he is from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I should have seen that. My old stomping grounds. Okay. He does say, though, next, Chris, for the record, I think twice weekly is the perfect number of shows.
Oh, perfect. So that's what I was
there
hoping
you go,
to hear.
Chris. Yeah, that's that's what you were hoping to hear. Yeah. Anyways, another person who works out. I am a do-it-yourselfer Vanguardian bogglehead from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Although I am not an engineer, I am a retired military officer. And a lot of people think many of us are as anal as engineers. Mm-hmm. That's definitely from someone in a Massachusetts person would write something like that. So he's just saying, hey, I'm guessing he's a lifer. I'm a lifetime military officer. I can be as anal as an engineer, as well you should be as a military officer. And thank you for your prior service. I don't have any particular questions at the moment, but I wanted to pass on a piece of your collective wisdom that was recently brought home to me loud and clear. Do you have any idea what collective wisdom he might be talking about? Just take a gander and see if you're right.
You need to go spend while you can, because something can happen at any moment. That's the classic one that comes up, but that's my guess.
That's your guess. You're close, actually. I will give you that. He said, and listen, folks, this is for all of you now. He wants to share. It's based on something Chris and I always talk about, and very close to what Chris just said, because what Chris just said is a driving reason we believe passionately in the fun number. So he says, my 76-year-old wife and I recently returned from a European river cruise, followed by a few extra days in Switzerland. Sounds beautiful. Mm-hmm. It was our first such trip from COVID. He got on to say a little bit about the trip and how it was. Let's just say, folks, he loved it. It was pretty good. We found that, like some fine wines, we did not travel as well as we once did before COVID. Mm-hmm. This immediately made me think of your frequent references to go-go, slow-go, no-go, fun spending. I think we have likely moved from go-go to slow-go after our last trip. The cruise and the extra time were generally delightful, and we enjoyed everything. But boy, oh boy, has getting there and getting back gotten harder since 2019 for us. We experienced no unusual transportation delays, no unusual hassles, but everything just seemed to us to be so much harder than it has in the past. And on the cruise ship, those 8:30 in the morning departure time for shore excursions seemed to come a lot earlier than they used to. I like that part. Mm-hmm. The overall conclusion is that we don't have the energy or stamina to travel at the go-go pace of our earlier years. Any future travel will be made with a greater degree of respect to our aging bodies and a realization that we are now slow-go traveling class. Although I intellectually understood the points you always made about this on your shows, I didn't really embrace it, but I do now. I thought that being in good health, exercising regularly, keeping fairly trim, our slow-go phase of retirement won't hit me, or won't hit me perhaps until my 80s. I was wrong, and the good advice to be found on your show was spot on. Thanks for helping to keep a reality check on things. We'll be sure to pay more attention in the future when you are addressing issues of aging. I liked that when he wrote it. I appreciate, listen, you taking the time to share that, because it adds credence to what I see. I'm not in my 70s. I started being a retirement planner in my early 40s, started being a financial planner at 36, but I didn't stop being a retirement planner till my early 40s. I was no way near 70. I'm going to be 60 next year. I'm not that far away from 70. But what I did do is observe my clients, listen to them as they spoke to me, and I observed my mom and dad. And I often talked mostly about my dad, not my mom. And that was only because mom listens to the show and would kill me. Dad doesn't listen to the show. So I can talk more openly about what I observed as he aged. And I shared that on the show, if you remember, Chris, many, many times. Mm-hmm. I don't so much anymore because my dad is going to be 89 and he is definitely in the no-go phase of his life. But as he was going from go-go to slow-go, I talked a lot about what I was observing. We talk openly that our brain begins aging at 53, Even though our bodies have aged long before that, our brain's ability to understand financial concepts reaches its peak at 53 and then starts going down from there, slow at first, much rapidly as you get into your 70s and 80s. I often said it's a tail event. There are some people who never mastered financial understanding or are interested in it, and there are some people who'll never lose it, but the majority of us are the bell curve, and it's going to start going down at 53. We talk about that. We talk about our bodies aging. We encourage our clients and our listeners to try to spend on fun while they can in the go-go years. This is a unique case, Chris, because he saw it all at once. He stopped traveling in 2019. He didn't travel again until several years later. And he noticed, wow, I remember in 2019 when we did a trip, traveling wasn't that bad. I still had fun, but man, is it a pain in the you-know-what getting there and getting back. That's what's happening. He is moving into the slow-go phase. The next stop is no-go, or sadly, dead-go, which is a term we don't use. But what I'm getting at, you don't necessarily go from slow-go to no-go. You may pass away. But it's why we encourage you to look at your retirement. I don't want to say the way we do it, but in a similar way or a identical way. It's totally up to you. It's why we question constantly the wisdom of Monte Carlo-based probability statistics, safe withdrawal rate retirements that would have limited this gentleman to perhaps doing some of these trips because he would have spent perhaps more than whatever his advisor's quote-unquote safe withdrawal rate was. Oh, no. You may need that money when you're 95. Don't spend it. That's bull. Why don't you figure out of all your assets, how much you can spend on fun? And then go spend it, with the majority being spent in your go-go years, which nobody knows how long the go-go phase will be, so it's totally objective. When we work on a client's positioning, if we're working with a client and helping them position their money, when we work on the go-go phase, Chris's team has given me and the people I work with on the investment side has given us their fund number. We determine it with Chris's data. I know the fund number, and I will then say to someone, how long do you think your go-go phase will be? And they look at us with question marks in their eyes. They don't know. And I tell them it's not a right or wrong answer. It's totally objectionable. It's not objectionable. It's
subjective.
Objective. Subjective? Okay. Mm-hmm. Not objective? Okay.
No.
It's totally subjective. But you base it off of your health, maybe what you saw with your family. For most people, their go-go phase, if they retire, say in their 63 to 65, their go-go phase could be 8 to 12 years. That's what we see, depending on how old they are and their health. And then the next thing we ask them is, let's just say their fund number is $800,000. We'll say to them, what percent of that $800 do you want to spend on that go-go phase? It's not that we're forcing them to do it. It's not that we're holding a gun to their head and say, you got to spend that money on fun. It means when we put the investment portfolio together, we're going to principally protect those dollars, especially the dollars that they intend to spend on fun over the next immediate number of years, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, 7 years. I protect all that. It's not about return on that money anymore. It's a return of that money. The good news is, and I'm going to do an EDU show on this, we are finding more and more and more principal protected guaranteed options, not just MIGAs, but others that we don't talk about because the interest rates were way too low. A MIGA, a five-year MIGA yesterday, Chris, just hit 5.5% guaranteed for 5 years. I don't think the forward-looking inflation over the next 5 years will average 5.5%. I think the Fed is going to work hard to get it down. They are working hard. I don't even have to think. They are. That's why the bond market has been decimated this year. The Fed is actively trying to get inflation under control. They've said repeatedly their target is 2%. I don't think they're going to get it to 2%. But over the next 5 years, I don't think it's going to keep averaging 8%. The Fed will never let it. It'll never let it average 8% over the next 5 years. It's not to say it couldn't happen, but they're going to go out of their way not to. If you can get 5.5% guaranteed on fund money right now for 5 years, in other words, protect the first 5 years of fund spending now, put the next 5 years in, say, this MIGA, you just kept pace with inflation, in my opinion, on those dollars with no risk. I'm not saying to run out and do that. I'm saying, like this man said, protect your go-go phase, find your fun money, spend it and have fun. Because even though aging is always going to happen to someone else, it's never going to happen to you. I get it. Just like someone else will suffer the stroke, not you. That's what I used to think. It's always going to be someone else, never me. I'm healthy. I work out. I hike. How the hell am I ever going to have a stroke? It can happen to you at any time. Come up with a fun number. Monitor it. Don't just come up with it once. It's got to be monitored, evaluated every year. Watch it and spend it before you enter slow go and then no go and beyond. Anything you want to add to that? It's just a PSA.
Yeah, good,
but
good email. I like it. You know, it's those stories repeatedly occurring that brought us to the approach that we use, because we try to address that particular issue, the fact that there is a finite go-go period, and no one knows exactly how long it's going to be, but it is finite. And so many people, it just creeps up on you, and suddenly you realize you have the money, but not the ability to do the things maybe that you were planning to do. So don't delay a lot of those things. The most important things that you're trying to check off your bucket list should happen very soon, once you get into your 60s, I'd say, because at any moment that could be taken away from you, the ability to do that, and then there's going to be regret starting to seep into your life. And if you can avoid it through proper planning and preparation to make sure the older you is taken care of in a way you feel comfortable, that you wouldn't be embarrassed to provide resources for the older you as they looked back on the younger you and judged them on their approach. You put that together and then realize you've got this extra money. Why wait arbitrarily? Do it. You need to do it because something could happen to you or your spouse or friends you were planning to do it with, or who knows what. So you say you do it relatively early and then you do have an extended go-go period. What's the worst case scenario? Worst case is you have all those memories and you're still having fun doing stuff. Maybe you don't do 12 bucket list items because you splurged and did some earlier and you just don't, you can't fund unlimited fun budget for the go-go period. Most people can't. But you've all done things in your life that you really appreciate the memories, particularly those things that you've done with family. And that pays lifetime dividends, not financial dividends, but the dividends of memories and the smile on your face, way better than the regrets of not ever getting to it. That's what we're talking about here. So really appreciate the person emailing in, and thanks for bringing it up.
I thought it wasn't a question, more of a PSA and an explanation. But before we wrap up, I do want to make mention, and I think you would agree, Chris, we're not saying this approach is going to work for everyone. We're not saying it's the only approach to do. We believe in it passionately. I think you can understand that. But I think you would agree, Chris, there are going to be cases or situations where perhaps this approach is not appropriate. I think we should at least point that
sure.
out. It's
for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not this our way or no way. There are times where maybe a probability-based Monte Carlo projected safe withdrawal rate way to plan for your retirement is superior than our way. Only you can decide that. So I know we get a lot of people who listen and believe in our approach, but there's probably an equal amount of people who might be saying, hey, I don't think it's going to work for me because of this, that, or the other thing. That's perfectly fine. Chris and I aren't saying ours is the only way to project or plan your retirement. It's just one of many ways. And again, we don't have a relationship with our listeners, so it's going to be up to you to decide which approach is best for you. The industry standard safe withdrawal rate, Monte Carlo approach, we call it the secure retirement income process. That's just a name we created. It's not an industry name. But our approach that's based more on trying to come up with the concept that we have of the fund number. And there's other advisors with other approaches. Look around as you plan for your retirement and see which one fits you best. Just want to keep pointing that out to people, because we do have listeners who have reached out to us in the past in emails, and we've read a few that say, you know, I can't do what you're doing. Here's my situation. I got this issue. What do you think? And we don't want people to feel this is the only way. It's the way we like to do it, but there could be other ways that might work for you. Yeah. Anyways, just wanted to throw that in as well.
Well, great. Well, thanks everybody for hanging in for another Q&A show. If you have questions, send them in to jim@jimhelps.com and put in the subject line question for the podcast. Yep. Next week, we'll hear the poll results.
If you have a comment on the rabbit hole or repeating myself, which Chris always does, if you have comments on that, I will read the results of our findings next week. I promise we'll lead with it on next week's show.
Okay.
But we got 68 emails in, so now there's a chance to get a few more. Maybe they'll tip the scales in one direction or another.
Maybe.
Of should we do rabbit holes or not? So anyways, sorry we didn't get to it, but Chris won't let me go further. So it's all his fault.
It's all good. It gives us something to come back for next week. So thanks, everybody. We'll be back next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's jim@jimhelps.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.